ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music and more.
Time again for Warwick Hadfield, journalist, sports writer, author and raconteur, to join us for Warwick's weekly wrap of the major incidents and themes in local and world sport. Warwick, good evening. Welcome back to Nightlife.
Good evening to you, Philip. It's good to be here.
Well, as a Tasmanian by birth, we should start with this massive win for Tassie in the NBL final. The Tasmanian Jack Jumpers, the basketball team, have won the whole shooting match.
Yeah, they certainly have. And look, I was a Tasmanian by choice for a decade, so I'm going to join with you in this celebration.
It's quite
an historic win.
Yeah, it is quite something, isn't it?
It is. It's historic in a lot of senses. There was once, of course, the Hobart Tassie Devils, who disappeared, I think, in the mid-1990s. They had a number of wonderful players like Steve Carfino and the coach, Doc Atkins, who made a great contribution to Australian basketball. But it was a tough old time, and I can remember their chairman, a guy by the name of Wayne Monahan, doing chook raffles in Hobart pubs, trying to stop them from going broke. There was also the Tassie Islanders, who won the Women's League in 1991 with players like Debbie Black. And I love to tell the story of Debbie Black. She worked at the Hydro and we used to play touch footy at lunchtime. We invited her down to play and she just had, as all champion sports people do, she had this great ability to create space. And she created the space and started running. And she's yelling out, "Warwick, what do I do now? What do I do now?" I said, "I'll run alongside you when I tell you to put the ball down." And she did. But anyway, look, back to the Jack Jumpers. It was just huge. Jack McVay, he was adjudged the MVP for the whole series, but I reckon he won it in game three with that three-pointer from, as they say in basketball, from downtown.
The middle of the court,
That was that was a telling moment. I think right then the Jack Jumpers would have thought, gee, we can win this. And even though they lost game four and had to travel to Melbourne for game five, and they managed to win it by 2 points, it was just a fabulous effort. And look, the celebrations, it's been unabashed pandemonium in Hobart, as it was at the John Cain Arena when the few Tasmanians had flown across Bass Strait. it means a lot. I mean, as a Tasmanian, you'll know this, and as someone who went down there and got told I was going to this place full of, I don't know, reprobates and so on, Tasmania is still the butt of a lot of jokes, and it's not funny anymore. And it was something used by the coach, Scott Roth, I think, with his crew to defend the island. And speaking of John Cain Arena, it was also evident, in my view, in the AFL commentary when Jack Riewoldt interrupted the call of the game between Richmond and Sydney to say to the rest of the commentary team, "Did you hear that sound? That was the roar from when the Jack Jumpers just beat Melbourne United just across that," because the game was being played just across from the MCG at Brunton, just across.
Yeah, I was at the G myself and across the road. That's right, the Jack Jumpers.
Well, you didn't hear it.
Yeah. Well, we're in the middle of the MCG.
Well, Jack Riewoldt reckoned he heard that. And Jack, of course, he was ecstatic because for him, it's all part of this whole thing that Tasmania can compete at the national level, at the elite level.
Well, of course, that's right. It has implications for the AFL team, doesn't it? That one day they might repeat it. I mean, it's an interesting thing because the Jack Jumpers are a team of imports. Well, I mean, indeed, the whole of the NBL are teams of imports, aren't they? It's not the homegrown aspect of the sport that's interesting in a way, is it? Whereas perhaps with the AFL, it will be.
Well, yes, except to any Tasmania team. I wouldn't allow to call them the Tasmanian Devils because of copyright. Any team will be assembled under the rules of the AFL draft and salary cap. So players will be drawn from everywhere. But look, as we can see, and Geelong do this very well, they go for the local product whenever they can. But if a game has a higher pick on the AFL draft, doesn't matter where you come from, you go, and it's players are whisked from one side of the continent to the other in the AFL. And you know, some stays to save it, like Pavlich when he went to Perth, even though he was born and raised in South Australia, but others can't wait to get back home. But look, you know, I think it's interesting that most of these basketball teams, they're all franchises rather than clubs.
Yeah, that's right.
And they come and go, the licences come and go, as they did with the Hobart Tassie Devils. It was a fight to keep them alive for a long time, and a fight that was eventually lost. And I think there was a Geelong side in the NBL some time ago, and there's been teams from...
It's been the history of basketball in Australia, hasn't it, in a way? It's been a sometime thing, hasn't it?
It has. I mean, look, you know, even the Sydney Kings have had moments when they weren't, with all of that the wealth of that city behind them, and basketball in Melbourne has been reshaped and realigned many times. I think there were as many as four teams in Melbourne at one stage, but they've come and gone, and they amalgamate and do all sorts of things. It's just the nature of the sport. It's like that in America too, where the towns and the cities, the license can move from one to another. Mm. It's a fascinating. I mean, the game was only invented by the Reverend Naismith to keep young men fit in winter. So it grew like Australian rules football did out of that. And they did it inside because they were in the far north of the United States where it was snowing outside.
That's right.
And of course, the most important, they used baskets for fruit initially, which is why it's called basketball. But the biggest advance in the whole game was cutting the bottom out of the basket. So the game sped up dramatically. Someone didn't have to climb up and get the ball.
Get the ball out of the basket. That's right. Hey, I wonder, what's the stadium debate in Tassie over the AFL? Where's that at, do you think?
Where's that? Who knows?
Has there been any movement since the election, state election problem?
Well, there has. There's been this whisper that the Labor Party, which of course didn't necessarily oppose it, but got a backside full of splinters sitting on the fence saying that they supported the stadium, but they would want to renegotiate with the AFL. We all know that was going to go. Mm. But after Rebecca White stood down as leader of the Labor Party, there's been these rumours and whispers that policy is going to change and they're going to support it. Now, the Liberal Party went to the election in full support of the stadium, but I'm not Anthony Green by any stretch of anyone's imagination, but I did note that the polls didn't go all that well for the Liberal Party. The Labor Party got an increase in votes, so if people voted on the policy of renegotiating the deal with the AFL, that's another thing to take into account. And a lot of independents. And I seem to remember Jackie Lambie using bloody somewhere to describe something the stadium, which suggested to me she wasn't exactly in favour of it. And I just checked in on the voting, and who knows who's going to have the balance of power. It's certainly not going to be a straight-out Liberal Party or Labor Party in control of the government in Tasmania. So I don't know. I think that's all you can say, Philip. I really do.
Hmm. It's further than the
situation. But with the rider, and I think it's pretty clear, the AFL is not going to give Tasmania a licence without a stadium.
Without a stadium, no. Hmm. Look, staying with the AFL, what's gone wrong with the West Coast Eagles? Some people are suggesting they won't win a game this season. That's a long call, but still. Mighty powerhouse, and now what's happening?
I'm sure if Adam Simpson's listening and we come up with a solution, he'll be all over it. He was a successful premiership coach not that long ago, 6 years ago, and now he's got a team that hasn't won a quarter so far this year, lost everything, got the wooden spoon last year, got thrashed out of sight a couple of times last year, and has been thrashed out of sight again a few times this year. And look, Fremantle is on top of the ladder at the moment. But I don't think West Australians are going to cop that. They will want the Eagles to be doing a lot better. I mean, the history of Australian rules football in Western Australia goes right back to 1868, and that's just a decade after the first ever game in Melbourne in 1858. And the West Australians have given an awful lot to the game. I mean, go back to the turn of the last century. Jimmy Melbourne was the first Aboriginal player at the elite level with East Perth. And out of the West have come some of the greats of the game, including Polly Farmer. He won a flag at Geelong. And then in the 1990s, of course, the Eagles won two grand finals, the first non-Victorian side to win premierships in what had become the AFL. Yeah. And they've won a couple since then. And as I said, most recently, 2018. But it seems they've got a few veterans who turn up every week. They've got this young fella called Harley Reid, a high draft pick who everyone thinks is, the next Gary Ablett or something like that. But in between, there just doesn't seem to be the depth of talent. And Adam Simpson is saying he's here for the duration. It's all about rebuilding, and he's prepared to do all the hard yards and put in. But I would think, and boy, this might be controversial in some ways, but if they don't start playing a lot better, they're going to have trouble keeping Harley Reid. He's grew up in Victoria in a little town called Tongala. And the Eagles will know, because they've been doing it themselves, stolen a few back from the eastern states at various times, they will know that there'll be lots of recruiting people whispering in Harley Reid's ear even now. Do you really want to play and get thrashed every week, or do you want to come back to, I don't know, Hawthorn, or come back to Richmond or whatever and play in a winning side? Right. So there's an awful lot of challenges. There's There have been cultural issues at the Eagles that, you know, there were terrible board issues back in the late 1990s, falling out between major players. And then I think there were some cultural issues despite the success of that side in 2006. That, you know, people like Ben Cousins come to mind, and Kerr, who had off-field issues, which I think came from allowing the wrong type of people to be associated with the club. Mitchell White, who came from East, came to the play with Geelong, once explained to me, "You just got to understand what's happening at the Eagles." Now, they've obviously put that to right when they won a flag in 2018, and it might just be cyclical. But as I said, I can't imagine West Australians are copping this for too long. And Adam Simpson will know there's there'll be talk at board level about whether he's the right person for the job.
Yes, the position of the coach. One of the greatest.
Well, it's easier to sack one coach than 40 players.
Oh, the coach, always a rock solid position, Les. I mean, one of the game's most most secure jobs, I would think not. Tell me about the stall gift. Now, this. This running race, I don't know, what's the history of this? Because it's a professional running race. You win money, but it's run at the Central Park Oval. It's Stawell, which is a Victorian country town. How did this happen?
Yeah. Well, it started way back in the 1870s. It's almost as old as Australian rules football, and people are allowed to bet on it. Instead of having just everyone starting from the same line, there have been handicaps. Mm. And it's become, I mean, look, if it's Stawell Gift, you know autumn's just about to start. It's the same as Bell's Beach and the surfing there. When those two events are on, you know that summer's over. And it's never, apart from COVID and a couple of world wars, it's never not been run, but it was in serious danger of not being run on Monday when the drought in the Wimmera broke with a vengeance, and Central Park Oval became Central Park Lake. And so it took a couple of hours. They waited, and eventually they were able to run the finals of the men's and women's gifts. And Jack Lacey and Chloe Mannix-Power were the winners. Now, Lacey was born and raised in Melbourne, and he was more than happy to run in the damp conditions because he reckoned he'd grown up playing on wet suburban Australian rules grounds before concentrating on sprinting. But I have to say, it was quite the alien environment for Mannix-Power. Now, she's from the Gold Coast. She runs a surf club there, and her special subject is really beach sprinting. But somehow she managed to power through the wet. And, that's what a name suggests she would have done, wouldn't it? And so she won the race. And Peter Boll was also racing
so
in
why
the...
So why was he running it? Because he's a would-be Olympian.
Yeah, we'd like to have a big name there. And look, I would think Peter Boll at the moment is doing everything he can to get some, you know, get some leg speed back, because as we know, he missed an awful lot of athletics after that, after the Sport Integrity Australia botching of his drug test.
Oh, and, treated appallingly, yes.
Oh, yes, and Sport Integrity Australia don't like people pointing that out, I can tell you, but I have great admiration for him, and I know a lot of other people did. I mean, he could have sued the pants off the bureaucrats in Canberra. But he proved he was bigger than a lot of them and decided to just get on with life. And he had to start. It was a handicap race, the 1000, and he had to start well back. Obviously, when you finish fourth at the Olympics, you people are going to look at you and think you can run pretty fast. So he said at the top of the turn, he realised he'd left it a bit late. And so a young bloke by the name of Bryce Riley has got a pretty good bragging rights for a long, long time. I'm the person who beat Peter Boll at Central Park.
No, you didn't. Peter Boll started miles. But, you know, there's this crazy sort of handicapping thing. So it's not actually, I mean, I don't know what it's actually showing, the whole thing. Is it? It's essentially a gambling event, isn't it?
Well, no, the bookies weren't allowed there this year.
Okay.
Although there was an attempt at a gambling sting, but that fell over as well. I mean, there's... Look, yes, it has been a betting thing, and up until recently, the bookies were allowed to actually be there. But I don't think it's entirely...
But hang on,
I think
you can still bet on the race, though, can't you?
Off the field, yes, away from the game.
Yeah.
But look, yeah, I mean, you can bet on Australian rules football as well. And you can. There's not much you can't bet on in this country. You can bet on elections. Did you know that?
Yeah, I know.
Should we call them off? Should we just say, look, there can't be anything that we can't gamble on. Let's not have elections. I know.
All right, look, the Rugby League, the West Tigers have unaccountably started to win games.
That's a good way of putting it. Look, it's been a long time since the Tigers won two in a row, and they managed that on the Easter Monday match against Parramatta. And you might call it a sort of, if we can go to some pig Latin, you can say it was a bit of a carpe diem moment. Adam Caesar seizing the moment. He kicked a field goal with 30 seconds to go. And someone said to me, this was last year when the West Tigers couldn't beat time with a stick, Caesar would have missed. Oh, sorry, Luke Brooks, who was the incumbent then, would have missed the field goal that Caesar kicked, and Parramatta would have kicked that penalty on full time, and it would have been the other way around. It's amazing what a difference 1 point makes. But look, there's been an awful lot of rancour, an awful lot of off-field fighting. I mean, the Balmain and Western Suburbs amalgamation has not always been a happy one. Not a lot of concord, despite Concord Oval being one of the home grounds back in the day for Western Suburbs. But Benji Marshall, look, he's part of the club. He's been there. He's a premiership player with the club. And he's got awful a lot of loyalty. And I think he's doing what his name suggests. He's marshalling. And he's marshalling some young talent, because the try that got them back into the game yesterday was scored by this young fellow, Lockie Galvin. But unfortunately for him, he's also got himself suspended. So Marshall is now doing what I think he's talking about, what coaches need to do. Sometimes they go back to the tried and true, and sometimes they just pin their ears back and hope. And so Marshall is going to try and play this young fellow, Latu Finu, all of 18, as Lockie Galvin's replacement, and see if they can get three in a row, and then though I think there would be some belief that the West Tigers are starting to turn it around a little
bit.
There
you go. All righty, Warwick. It's always great to talk. Just before you leave, though, the A League women's finalists have been confirmed as well in the round.
Yes,
ball game.
We can point. Yeah, well, Melbourne City, Sydney FC, Western United, Melbourne Victory, Central Coast Mariners and Newcastle Jets. Now, Melbourne City and Sydney FC get the week off, but Sydney FC missed out on the Premier's plate, sitting pretty going into the final weekend, but they lost 4-0 to Melbourne Victory, and then City beat Perth 2-1. So you still get the week off, but I think Sydney FC would have wanted to have won the Premier's plate as well. So the other matches are elimination matches: Western United, Melbourne Victory, Central Coast Mariners and Newcastle Jets building each other up to see who gets the right to go that little bit further. But look, the A-League women, they don't quite get the extra coverage that we thought they might after the Women's World Cup, but it's still a pretty good competition with people like Courtney Vine and so on in it. So it would be worthwhile just tuning in. They've got the first finals aren't for a fortnight, or just less than a fortnight now, but it's going to be worth watching. And Western Sydney Wanderers in the men's competition had a bit of a win on the weekend too. I mean, they normally fight amongst themselves. The supporters boycott and the coach is volcanic, but he became a bit of a caldera when his side won yesterday. So some interesting things still going on in the A-League men's competition as well, which has got a bit to run before they get to the finals.
Good stuff. All right, Warwick, let's kick on, as they say in the sporting circle.
I'm sure we can.
See ya.
Good on you. Good on you, Philip.
You've been listening to a Nightlife podcast. For more great conversations about the issues that impact you, as well as features on travel and food, head to the Nightlife webpage. You'll find it at abc.net.au/nightlife. You don't need to be a night owl to enjoy the nightlife.